does he do? He might go all the way. He gives it away. It's a chance. It'll be a goal. He can. Come at the moment. Come at the champion.
This is a Swans Cast Extra, the number one Swans fans weekend preview podcast. In this week's episode, we preview the Swans Round 16 match against the Bombers on Saturday afternoon at the MCG. We discuss John Longmire's situation, the AFLCA votes, team changes, the match ahead, and we give you our matchups, key points, predictions, and the weekend forecast. This is your host, Justin, and with me tonight is new microphone man, Stephen Park. You're actually sounding really good, not like you're dialing in on dial-up from over the seas, man.
Well, you know what happens when you come in from Tasmania, you do dial up, but I'm actually glad Josh and Justin have organised me a new mic, and I'm back on the table, mate.
Mate, you sound absolutely great. You actually sound like you've updated to the 21st century with us.
Yeah, well, Tasmania's finally got something decent, you know? I can't believe it.
Hey, at the moment, I thought Tasmania was only known for apple and salmon exports.
Yeah, well, now we've got a decent microphone, and we can actually get into the Swans Cast Extra.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining us again. It has been a while since you've been on, about a month or so, actually.
Yeah, I know. It's been a bit of a disappointment, really, but that's what happens around this time of year with reports and everything else that goes on in our lives, isn't it?
It is. But look, let's kick off the show. So we've got a big show ahead. Top of the agenda is the AFL Coaches Association votes, which came in, and it was a clean sweep for the Swans. We took all the votes. As Josh and I, who are on the review podcast, discussed, it was going to be hard to split Dawson and Parker, and the coaches in the end, Stephen, they just didn't split them at all, did they?
No, they didn't. They were both very good. Dawson, outstanding. I believe he is going to be one of our shining lights over the next 3 or 4 years.
Oh, he was absolutely amazing. And Parker's hitting a massive vein of form. And if he picks up the 3 Brownlow votes, do you reckon he could almost be like a Smokey come the end of the season?
I do. Parker, I would say, is actually playing better now than what he's played in a couple of years. The last 6 weeks, he has been outstanding.
It's very much like his 2016 start, isn't it?
It is, very much so, and hopefully it continues, and he may even push for us getting into finals.
Oh, that would be great. We're only one game end percentage out. Thank you, Fremantle, for that. So, and we play Freo in a couple of weeks anyway.
I know, that actually could be really interesting. I've actually got a prediction, Justin, which I know you didn't want me to share on the podcast, but here's something statistically speaking for you.
Yep.
Clubs that are sitting 7-7 at this stage of the year often finish 9th if they get 8-7.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
So what are Richmond on at the moment?
I think they're on 8-7 currently.
Damn. That would be great if they were on 7-7 and they finished 9th. It would just be perfection.
It would be, wouldn't it?
The rest of the votes, Heaney. We discussed him in the review. His second half was absolutely really good. The coaches thought so. He got 5 votes. Mills was very impressive. He got 3. And Rampy and Kennedy got 2 each. So it's a good round out. And look, we dominated the match. And to be honest, the Suns, they put up a good fight in the first half. But they were never really going to get votes out of that.
Justin, I really like the fact that Mills is actually starting to pick up again. He's actually starting to show some form that he had before he actually broke his arm.
Yeah, he is. The last sort of month and a bit, he's been really good. And I feel that last week in particular, he really filled in the gap when Ali went into the ruck. And he filled it up really well, you know, with aplomb, really. And if you go back to the Essendon match when we first played him earlier this season, which we're going to talk about very soon, he was really, really good in that game as well, despite the fact that Fantasia kicked 4 goals in like the first two and a bit quarters.
I agree with you and what you said, Justin, but what I would actually say is Mills has actually started to intercept Mark again over the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is really good. And the question I have for you is, do you think he actually plays better when we've only got 2 talls rather than having the 3-plus Mills?
Yeah, well, I mean, when you look at it, Rampy's not a particularly tall player. He's 186, I think. But it's a fair point. I think we talked about this many times earlier in the season, was the fact that Mills trained as a midfielder in the preseason. So when he first played at the start of the year, he just looked out of kilter. He looked like he wasn't even trained to play as a defender. He honestly looked worse than when he first played AFL football. So in one point, yeah, I think he kind of benefits from that fact that he can intercept a bit better without the taller players. And two, I think having some time in that position has actually helped him a fair bit.
Yep, I totally agree. And I think Mills now will become one of our premier defenders over the next season and a half if they leave him there.
Yeah, agree. So we're also going to talk a little bit about John Longmire just briefly, and then we'll move on to the rest of the show. But did you catch what he said on AFL 360 at the start of the week?
Yes, I'm contracted to the Sydney Swans Football Club. Yes, I did hear it.
It was a very Sydney Swans-like Freudian slip when it came to Franklin a good 4 or 5 years ago. Well, no, it'd be 6 years ago now when that slip was first made.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I watched that interview 3 times, and 3 times I came up with the same conclusion. I think he's going.
Yeah, it's a weird one. My opinion on this one is I think he's had a contract offer from North Melbourne, and I think it's been huge. And he's considering it because if you get a contract offer from another company, it's middling, and you're like, oh, yeah, whatever. You're not going to have that slip. But when it's something you're seriously considering, you're going to have that slip. So, look, I think there's a chance he could go. I think at the moment it's probably 60-40, to be honest. And it could be a case of if you look at North Melbourne, with some work, some good recruitment, and some senior players to sort of replace their aging players, they could be on the brink of challenging. So they could be a project for Longmire to bring up again. Sort of like what he did when he had the Swans. He inherited a good team, but he had to bring them up to the next level.
Yep, I totally agree. And the thing that I would actually say is Horse would be looking at it. The problem North have got is they don't have that younger generation of players like the Swans do, and that could be something that may actually change his opinion. But I reckon you're right, Justin. I reckon that North contract has come up, and he's trying to use it for leverage to get a bigger Swans contract.
Yeah, and I think that's what the general consensus is. And I think as far as the Sydney Swans go, their management and Tom Harley and Andrew Pridham and so forth, I think they acknowledge that and accept that as being, I guess, par for the course, really. That's what happens when you've got, he's what, the second longest serving coach in the AFL at the moment? No, the third longest behind Chris Scott, I think it is, if we can get the Scott twins right, and Alistair Clarkson. But he's also the third or fourth most successful win-wise coach in the AFL and also grand final-wise. So it's an interesting situation.
That's right, and you've got to look at it from the perspective that he's actually been at the Swans now for 17 years. Yep. 17 years is a long time.
Yeah, it is. And for those who might not know, he actually came along when Paul Ruse joined the Swans. So he was actually basically on his ticket when he joined. So it's an interesting one. And you look at also the situation with Reece Shaw. So the story behind the Paul Ruse to Sydney Swans deal was he went in as an interim coach. He won his first game. Then he didn't have a good time after that. I think they lost the next 3 games, and he was 1-3. Terry Wallace, was basically the shoe-in, as it was discussed at the time very heavily. And then Paul Ruse just went and helped the Swans win a handful of games towards the end of the season. And he finished that season in good quality, good stead, and the Swans signed him, and the rest is history. So, I mean, you got Reece Shaw at North Melbourne, who was with the Swans for a decade himself. And, you know, it's a case that he may stay. So it's a weird situation. But my hope, Stephen, is that if we do lose John Longmire, we somehow get Reece Shaw back because he has certainly got some coaching chops on him.
You know what I'd like to see, Justin? I'd like to see something outside of the box. I'd actually like to see 2 senior coaches, Brett Kirk and Reece Shaw. Yep, 2 senior coaches.
I guess it's not unprecedented. You had that with Nathan Buckley to some extent.
That's right.
You certainly had that at other clubs as well.
Yep, and it's not a thing out of the mind, but I would actually not have a senior coach and a mentor. I would actually have 2 senior coaches. So it's actually a combined dual role that we actually try. And it's been done in other sports. A lot of European football does it, and some of the NBA teams do that as well. They have an offensive and defensive coach.
It's interesting. The Swans, for the second time in the last, what, maybe the second time in their history, or certainly a second time in the last two and a bit decades, have gone three captains on the field. So it's not, I guess, the Swans might be the first to pioneer something like that in the AFL. It certainly would be, it wouldn't be unprecedented, but it'd be very interesting. But the last thing now is team changes. So we've only got one change, and it's a forced change. So Callum Sinclair, who twice dislocated his right shoulder in the first quarter, in the first 30 seconds, actually, he has been dropped from the side, and in his place comes in Harry Cunningham. So a bit of an interesting discussion around it, Steve, about who was actually going to come in.
I am worried about it, Justin, I must say. We're going in with no ruckman, and I don't care whether Noel is up to it or not, but I'm actually concerned that that could be the difference between us winning and losing. I'm really glad that Cunningham's back in. He's one of my favourites. But going in with no designated ruckman really concerns me.
It's interesting because Essendon are in a situation where they don't have any fit ruck either. I don't know if you could actually call Zach Clark a ruckman. He's more like a tall, stilted potato, but he's not particularly good.
No, but this could actually do him the world of good. And whether he's any good around the ground or not doesn't matter. If he's actually feeding it down the throat of his midfield, it could really make a bone in our back for this game.
Yeah, look, Aliralee, he's athletic, and I think he's got the right level of athleticism to go with him. It's just whether or not he's got the tank. So I think it's going to be another Reed and Aliralee effort in the ruck, but we'll touch on that a bit later on anyway.
Yeah, that's right. We may as well move on because there's not much else to talk about there.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about straight into the preview of the match. So as we always do, a little bit of history. So the win-loss record between the Swans and the Bombers is amazing, actually. The Swans have won 9 of the last 10 since round 11, 2012. So that is an amazing streak. The only time we lost to them was last year, I believe it was. When we got beaten at Etihad. I think it was Etihad. I was in America at the time, so I just remember us being beaten comprehensively in that last quarter. But we beat them by 5 points. The most important and critical win is the last one, and it was by 5 points at the SCG, and it was a fantastic win. 11-11-77 to 10-12-72. Impressively, Will Hayward, he stole the ball from Zach Clark's hands to kick the winner, which I was very impressed with.
That's exactly right. I remember that. That was a terrific game, Justin. But going back on the one where we actually lost when you were in America, yes, it was at Etihad, and it was a disappointing loss, to say the least, because it was actually broke our streak of wins at Etihad.
Yeah, it did, yeah. Yeah, and we also lost to Richmond, the Gold Coast Suns, and Geelong in that run when we lost, I think, 4 from 5.
Yes, that's right, and it's a bit of a concern. So we'll have to wait and see. Let's hope it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, so Razio Fantasia, or Fantasia, depending on which commentator you get this week. God, that's got to be one of the best trolls of modern football time, really. Good old Hammer McLaughlin, he got fooled big time then. But Razio Fantasia was one of the stars for Essendon last time. He had 4 goals in the first two and a bit quarters, basically unsighted after halftime, really. Then you had Zach Merritt and Dylan Shields, especially in that last quarter. Zach Merritt was pretty immense for the first sort of 2.5 quarters. And then Dylan Shields really got off the leash in the last quarter. And that was a single-handed effort by your man, Ryan Clark, who did a great job on Dylan Shields to begin with, and then went to Zach Merritt when Zach Merritt was ripping the game apart. But there's no Ryan Clark this time around, Stephen.
Yeah, now tell me, Justin, why is he not playing? He had one mediocre game and then got dropped. I don't get it.
Well, I'm not too sure. I thought that like last week, I got to admit, I wasn't too sure about what the team structure was because last week was an extremely busy week for me. I never even really got a chance to have a look at the teams properly. But my understanding was he was just made an emergency. Well, it looks like he's not an emergency this week. So, look, I'm not too sure. Maybe the Swans are looking at Harry Cunningham. Because Harry Cunningham has done that job before. He's done it just as well. And his disposal is infinitely better. Ryan Clark can win plenty of the ball, except his disposal by foot is it's still atrocious. So it's going to be interesting. Do you think he's sort of out of favour, or do you think there's a bit more at play?
No, I think he's out of favour, Justin. I wonder what's actually happened, because those three or four games that he actually played where he played really well, I would say he was probably in our best four or five players each week. Then he had one game where he didn't have as many possessions as what he could have.
Yeah.
And then it dropped off.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, really. I'm not too sure what to make of it. I wonder if it's... They kind of looked at it on a balanced case and went, well, he's offering this one thing that we might be able to get from a combination of players, but he's not giving us the one thing we need, which is clean ball use. So I wonder if it's like also a combination thing with Zach Jones, having him and Zach Jones in the midfield together.
You could be right, actually, because he actually came out when Zach Jones came in, didn't he? So
yeah.
That's actually a very valid point.
And, you know, despite the fact that Zach Jones has a terrible reputation for his kicking on the weekend was really, really good. It was like 85%. It was insane on the weekend. So if he can keep that up, I think he's going to do away with that reputation of being an absolute butcher.
Ask yourself, Justin, how long were those kicks?
Yeah, not far. Some of them, though.
That's exactly
one,
right.
One of them was a really, really good inside 50.
Yes, I agree with that. There was one good kick.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there was a couple across the field. Again, it's playing the Suns, and at that point, the Suns are kind of given up. But against quality sides, his kicking can be found out. So he's a risky player. He's very much risk-reward. So we'll just see what happens. But obviously, last time, some a bit of dramatic action after the final siren, which was heavily debated during that week, which was Dane Rampey, the flagpole sitter.
Yes, do you think he'll do anything again this week?
I'd
love
God,
to
I
see
hope
it.
Not. I hope he can go through a game without anything stupid or remotely close to a brain fade. He's having so many good games, and then he just does something absolutely ridiculous.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? He does keep it interesting, though, especially when we're going poorly.
There's always something interesting when he's on the field. You're never left wondering. But he was really good. What's his face? The package? Stingray? Stinger?
Jake Stinger.
He wasn't particularly good, but he is their danger man. He's and Tippin Woody as well. So when Tippin Woody's on, they're on. When he's off, you know, hot pie, cold pie. So there's danger abounds in that team, and they usually like to cook with gas at the MCG.
Jake Stinger's back in this week, isn't he?
I have no idea. But to be honest, I haven't even seen the team yet. All I know is Cunningham's in.
Yep. So in Zach Clark, Jake Stinger, and Matt Goofy.
Oh, you mean the Assange lookalike?
Yes, that one.
I keep calling him little Julian Assange when I see him running around on the field.
He dyed his hair blonde, didn't he?
Oh, it has to be bleached because that is just white.
Yeah.
It's absolutely crazy, though. Jordan Dawson, he kicked two goals in that game, had five marks. And, you know, it was actually interesting looking at the possession he mapped between the two sides. Because Sydney had it almost all in their back flank or back pocket. Well, Essendon had about 80% in like the midfield going towards their attacking half. So, do you want to run us off some of the stats that we have from that game?
Yes. So, we're minus 26 in marks, plus 16 disposals, minus 12 tackles, Justin. That's a concern.
Yeah.
Minus 5 tackles inside 50.
Wow.
Another concern.
That's huge.
That is huge. Minus 13 inside 50s.
How many did we actually have?
We had 41 and they had 54.
That is ridiculous. And that was in that period of games when we were getting like 40 inside 50s, but kicking like 25, 30 scores.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It was interesting. And a lot of those were points, remember?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
68%.
Wow.
Percent efficiency inside 50. Minus 13 clearest.
Wow.
Minus 13.
Yeah, that's insane. Because I know we got smashed in it, but wow. I can see as well, 7 clearances we got beaten by.
Yep.
And the stats, I mean, almost all of them are in Essendon's favour, yet we still won.
But only by 5 points.
Only by 5 points. And they still had a chance with David Myers after the siren.
That's right, I remember that. And it dropped a bit short, didn't it?
Yeah, and that was the only reason why Dane Rampey didn't get a free kick pad against him for climbing the pole, because that was almost dead set certain free kick against.
Imagine if they'd actually had have paid the free kick.
I don't want to, because that would have been tragic. That would have been a shocking end to the match, really. But What do you make of Essendon's season so far? Because they've certainly been hot and cold. They haven't been consistent at all.
No, they haven't. And their defence is outstanding, but their midfield and their link-up with their forward line is shocking. I really like John Worsfold as a coach, and I actually think he deserves another couple of years. But he's got to work out his offensive game. I think his assistant coaches, his forward line coaches, are terrible, and I don't know who they are, but I think they need to step up their game.
Well, there has been a bit of talk about a potential post-season review of the football department and a big shake-up. We had, I can't quite remember which team it was, recently actually had a massive shake-up. I think it was Melbourne. Yeah, it was Melbourne. It had a massive football department shake-up, like a bit over a week ago, where they sort of got rid of some of the coaches, pushed them down to lower levels, back into development roles, and brought the VFL coach back up into the AFL team, the AFL coaching squad for match day.
That's exactly right. So he went in as their forward line coach, and one of their coaches went down and was made a development coach, and someone else went in as their VFL coach. It was quite an interesting change to do mid-season.
Well, I think it's just telling about the situation where the club is at and just how poor they've been. What are they, still 16th on the ladder? What, four wins? They've been utterly dreadful. They continue to be dreadful, despite the fact they've got some of the best players in the league. It's amazing just how bad Melbourne are.
That's exactly right. And it's structure for them and coaching, not personnel, because their personnel should be some of the strongest in the league.
And I guess that is another argument you can also level against Essendon in a way, that they have some good quality players, some explosive, dangerous players who can certainly hurt you on the scoreboard, on the field. Zach Merritt's a great ball winner, and he's a great outside runner. You've got Dylan Schill, who is an excellent outside runner. You've got Jake Stringer, who, when he can actually put it together for once, can rip a game from anyone, and he can kick four goals in about 15 minutes and completely blow open a game. Tipping Woody, who's shown with his 7-8 goal bags that he can actually kick goals. But again, like, when these players are off, well, every single one of them is off at the same time. And again, do you think it's a case of, like, Wushuk can't really coach, or do you think it's structural or a combination of everything?
I think it's a structural situation, and I think what's actually happened is their forward line has been decimated when went down?
Joey Danaher. Yeah.
Joe Danaher, yeah. When Joe Danaher went down, I think that actually destroyed their entire forward line structure. But also, I think they've got a big issue like us, is that their forward line can't receive the ball because their midfield can't actually kick.
Yeah, their inside 50s are deplorable. There was a bit of footage on Foxtel on the show On the Couch, and I've got Foxtel, but they showed a bit of footage of the Essendon game when they were going inside 50. Zach Merritt was a particular player that they zeroed in on. He was doing these 5-8 10-meter passes, chip passes, straight to opposition players, and they were rebounding it straight down the other end and scoring from it.
Yeah, and that's a big issue. And you look at it, Dylan Schill, issues with his kicking. Andrew McGrath, issues with his kicking. Zach Merritt, issues with their kicking. Darcy Parrish, issues with their kicking. Mason Redmond, issues with their kicking. That's your midfield.
Yeah, and they're all quick players. I think they've just gone almost what, like, the James Hurd game plan from 6 years ago was, which was get the ball, run it as quick as possible, and just try and basically move it past any kind of defence or cluster or zone before they can get in a position to actually defend.
Yep, I agree with you. And I also think they rely too much on their back line with Ahmed Saad running it out and trying to actually pinpoint a target, and Hurley doing lots of work. And Hurley seems to have lost it to me. He seems really angry all the time.
Well, wouldn't you be? I mean, when the midfield's getting spanked, the ball's basically living in there. And that's the
something
problem
that we follow.
I know it's kind of like our game, but our game's actually built like that. Our game is built to be defence first, build from defence, and move the ball fast when we get it. That's our game style. It's always been like that since John Longmire and even Paul Ruiz, right? And our selections of players at trade and draft have also been around that. Fast, skillful players, forward of the halfway, slower, stronger, bigger bodies, more back of halfway. And together they work, and, you know, I can think of Lewis Jetta's goal in 2012 in the prelim goal against Collingwood. That was built up from Ryan O'Keefe and Josh Kennedy, two of the biggest slower guys going around at the time, winning the ball. You know, your Luke Parkers, your Dan Hannabrys, who are reasonably quick, good skill, they're kind of in the middle, winning the ball and getting it to Lewis Jetta. So it's interesting, like Essendon's just gone so many biggish but very fast players who, when their disposals are a bit crap, it goes right off the boil. But then they've left their underbelly, their soft underbelly, which is definitely, I'd say, more their defence. And it's kind of like a lion to the soft underbelly. When you can get in there, you can just feast for days.
That's exactly right. The thing that I find funny is, at the beginning of the year, they were bagging John Worsfold out about his coaching style, saying that it was all offence and no defence. Then, 2 weeks ago, they come out and said about on AFL 360 that Essendon actually has the best defensive structure of any team in the league, but their offense is crap, and it's completely done a 360. So hang on, which one is it?
Well, I think he had to change tack because they were getting scored against in some games like there was no defense at all. And we're not talking like massive shootouts, but we're talking like players just literally walking it through. And at the moment, yeah, like they've kind of changed into what modern football is, which unfortunately is almost like a rolling maul. You know, you're talking 16 players behind the ball, half the game sort of style, which is, it's not pretty to watch. And if you look at the season as a whole, I mean, would you call this a pretty and enjoyable and beautiful season to watch?
No, not at all. And I watch a lot of football. I'd average probably 6 or 7 games a weekend, all the game. And I would say this has probably been one of, if not the worst season I've seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
I'd even say further back than that. I would say it's probably been the most boring and awful season to watch in about 20 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. It actually reminds me, and I love the games, but it actually reminds me of the 2005-2006 Grand Finals.
Yeah.
That the similar style of play, the really low scoring. It's like watching wet football every game.
Yeah, and that's what I said as well in, you know, the Good, Bad and Ugly during the review podcast, was the fact that, like, the scoring nature of the games is just so low. Like, teams are averaging, like, 70 points a game. And the AFL this week came out and said, this is, Hocking came out and said, well, you know, the game scores, they're closer, you know, there's an average time of, like, 80% of the game, it's, like, 12 points or less between the teams, and there's not, hasn't been as many blowouts, it's not as high a score, but it's closer and the finishes are closer. It's more exciting that way. I think if you're kind of looking at that, like you really like plucking at straws, just, you know, grasping more than anything else. So, yeah, it's, I still watch some of it and I just go, you know what? When no team kicks a score for 20 minutes and it's just a rolling maul for 20 minutes and it's just up and back, kick to kick like you have when you're 10 years old at the football yard, and you're trying to take speckies over each other. I mean, yeah, that's great for 15 minutes, but for 60 minutes, it gets bloody boring fast.
Yeah, I agree totally. And that's it. It's played now between basically the 240-meter arcs in both games. Both ends.
Exactly.
And that's what's happening.
The entries are so bad because the defense is packed. There's like always 10, 11 people in defense. And then when they get it up the other end, they've only got like 2, 3 players in attack against another 8 players, 9 players in defense. So now it's actually very rare that teams are getting out the back. And I think Geelong's really the only one that's been able to do that. And I think that's because they've had a couple of big forwards to stay at home and allow that to happen. So if they didn't have Tom Hawkins, I don't think they'd be playing anywhere near as well as they have been playing.
And I think the actual thing is having Gary Rowan there has been a massive help because he has that speed to go up but then get back and still be in a position to mark. But that's right. It's actually become this structural play that is actually quite boring, and it's stoppage after stoppage. And I'm not sure whether it's actually good for the game, but in saying that, it's actually been the closest season of matches because look at it. You've got from 1st to, is it 16th, can actually make the finals this year?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things where the AFL is looking at the changes of the rules and saying, usually by this time, it's the 8's locked in and it's very rare that a team can pop up. It's like, okay, if that is what you wanted before the year and you said, we want to make it more competitive and we want teams to have a genuine chance all the way up until round 2021 to make it, then you should have come out and said that. You shouldn't have come out and said, we want to make games more exciting and more high scoring. Let's make these really crappy rule changes.
That's right, and I'm actually not sure these rule changes have actually done this. I think it's actually just the way that football's evolved and structured.
Oh, I agree.
Because the only thing the 666 has done is basically allow teams to score in that instant after a goal is kicked.
Which is basically the first 5 to 10 seconds, that's it. You get a quick clearance, you've about a 50-50 chance of getting a mark and getting a score. I think the biggest change that's had this impact is the runner rule.
Because I agree totally.
They've had to play, like, teams are forced to play defensively if they don't have good on-field leadership. So you look at teams like the Swans, they were all over the shop in the first sort of 6 to 8 weeks. They got their act together by playing more defensively, more structured, more tempo football, and they used the on-field leaders to control things. And since then, we've lost, what, 2 out of 8 games or something like that. And we'll look.
And I'd actually say, that's right. And I'd actually say that's the reason we have 3 coaches. And if you actually look at it, we've got one who's usually in the forward half, one who's in the midfield, and one who's in the back half at all times.
Yeah, and that's where the teams that have been successful this year have really excelled. And it's kind of interesting. North Melbourne, we'll have a break in a minute, but North Melbourne, they've had a bit of a renaissance under Reece Shaw. And obviously, Reece Shaw has simplified their game, but I mean, you can also say that Scott overcoached them within an inch of their life, and same with Carlton to an extent. But the one thing you can see that Shaw's done is he's brought it right back, and then he's allowed his on-field leaders, which he has plenty of. Let's face it, they've got, what, 5-6 players 30 years or older. If they can't be leading the team out there, then what the hell are they doing? So they have experience, they have knowledge, and they're doing it. And now their captain is actually looking good. He's not looking like a, you know, potato anymore. He's actually looking like a decent captain. It's just weird.
It is, and that's exactly right. And you look at Brisbane, the reason they are going so well is because Luke Hodge is keeping that team together when they're out on the field.
Yep.
He's like an assistant coach on the field. You've got other teams that are doing similar things right across the board, and I reckon what you're actually going to see over the next 5 years is you will actually see a lot of playing assistants.
Yeah, and I think that's where Jarek McVay is going to come in when he comes back from injury. But we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to kick on with our Player of the Year social question, and then we're going to give you our forecast predictions, key points, and the weekend forecast ahead. So we'll be back right after this break.
Welcome to intermission.
Your manager, Liam Pickering, went on public record last week and said they've made contact. Presumably they've made an offer. They're not ringing up to say, how's John going? Can I ask you, why haven't you given North Melbourne an answer to this at this stage?
You can ask me, Robbo, but I'm not commenting on my contract. The club and I don't comment on contracts. I don't comment on playing contracts. I'm not coaching. Not commenting on coaching contracts. So
I'm not asking you about contracts. I'm not asking you about the Swans contract. I'm asking you that North Melbourne. Why haven't you answered North Melbourne with giving them an answer after they made an offer to you last week?
Well, that's on the assumption that they have, Robbo. I've been mindful of concentrating on my job at hand, and that's my job is to coach the club to the best of my ability, and that's what I'm doing.
Where will you be next year, John?
Where do you think I'll be, Robbo?
I think you will be in Sydney, but that's only my opinion. Where do you think you will be next year?
Well, we'll have to wait and see, Robbo. I'm absolutely contracted to the Sydney Swans Football Club. I have been there for 18 years. My commitment to this football club is very strong, and I am absolutely doing the best job of my ability, and that's all I've got to say on it.
And we're back. Now it's time for our Player of the Year, Stephen. So we had quite a lot of responses on social media from our Player of the Year post. We had over 30 responses on Facebook alone. Do you want to read us out the 1 to 5 votes, please?
Okay. On one vote, we had Captain Courageous himself, Mr. Kennedy. On two votes, we had the intercept marker that we've been talking about already, Callum Mills.
Yes.
On three votes, our new Premier Ruckman, Alia. On four votes, our outstanding and courageous leader, who's probably in Brownlow medal winning form, Mr. Luke Parker.
Yeah, love it.
And 5 votes. The man that I would actually say has won my heart over is our best, probably most efficient kick in our team, maybe even the competition, wow. Mr. Jordan Dawson.
That is one big statement, but I'll tell you what, his kicking has been pretty damn good this year. I love him. They're pretty close to what we had as our player of the year, going back to last podcast and also what we put up on the website. I would normally put in who's leading at the moment from our player of the year, but I actually have to tally votes from about the last 4 matches. Long story, not going to say it, but yeah, I've got to go back and tally the votes. So the next preview podcast, we will have the player of the year update for you. But rest assured, I believe that Luke Parker is still sort of leading it anyway. But it's interesting that Aaliyah, he got onto the fans' player of the year votes there, Stephen. But he didn't get on ours, and he didn't get on the coaches' votes either.
That's really interesting, isn't it? And I'd actually say that it's probably because people thought he did a wonderful job going in as that backup ruckman after Sinclair went down.
I thought he did a really good job. It was just, it's kind of hard because he got absolutely smashed in hitouts, and Reid did a better job in hitouts, like numbers-wise. But when you look at the numbers purely, he had 4 centre clearances. He had 4 of Sydney's 10 centre clearances. Luke Parker was the other one who had 4 centre clearances as well.
And I think that's how they'll use him this week. It won't be about him winning the ruck contest. It'll be about what he can do around the ground and how he can actually win the ball.
Well, if he can get another goal and not look as lost and confused when he gets the ball in front of goals again, that would be pretty damn good.
Yeah, that's right. I'm surprised that he actually did that, and the umpire actually tried to bring him back round to make it look better for him. I can't believe that. What was the umpire thinking?
He honestly looked confused when he got it and he had that chance. I know the commentary was laughing at it. I think Healy was having a bit of a dig, just saying, you know, just go back and kick the goal. Look at the umpire. He's actually helping him here. Shouldn't be helping him. He just should call play on. But look, he got the goal, and that's all that matters. It's his second AFL career goal, so... You know, well done, Aaliyah. It's great to see him, you know, basically perform so well and still prove that he's still, you know, flexible to play, you know, many different roles.
That's exactly right. And remember, at the beginning of last year, they were actually coaching him to be a backup ruckman. So I think he's done a good job.
And fortunately, he put the pain of the Bulldogs game as well behind him when he came from Wilderness to play that one-off game, and then got dropped straight after.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. That was bad, wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah. Social question time. So, thank you very much to Josh, who put out the social question. The social question for tonight's podcast is, well, it happened. What we had been hoping against for nearly 2 seasons now finally happened. Chief Sinclair is injured, leaving the Swans with no established ruckman. You know, where do we go for the remainder of the season? Many options have been thrown around by fans and sports media, from icing sinkers for the rest of the season to bringing Michael Knoll in straight away, even if he's not ready, and also to bringing in another defender and rucking Aaliyah Reid, and even Heaney. And there has been a few of our fans have also suggested Hayden McLean. So we got a few responses. We'll pick the best ones. So, Stephen, you want to kick us off?
So I've got Ash from Facebook. Bring in the Australian Idol runner-up or some stupid spud from the twos who will get smashed but won't take Aaliyah or Reid away from their best suited position. What's horse thinking?
Yes. Basically, and it just put a carbon rod in there and let him play. But Jesus, it's a weird position to be in. We've got Chris from Facebook. He said, I say give Knoll a go with Essendon having Bell Chambers out. He probably won't have a better opportunity to ease into the position than this weekend. If it doesn't work out, he won't have been smashed.
Totally agree, Chris. Totally agree. John from Facebook, I reckon give Knoll a crack. We only just lost to Collingwood when Sinclair was outdone by Grundy in the ruck, so let Knoll show his stuff and get some experience. After all, we picked him up for that reason, didn't we, Justin?
Yeah, we did. And it's interesting, we had a lot of responses that basically said, just give him a go. We had some really good sort of counter responses, but Ray from Facebook, he says, I would ruck Aaliyah, changing with Reid at full forward, leave McCartan down back, and bring in some more pace to Sinclair. You know what? I think Ray might be John Longmire. Because that is exactly
maybe
what they've
Ray
done.
Maybe Ray is.
Yes, what they've done down to a T. Last one, please, Stephen.
This one, I reckon, is the best one, Justin. Alex from Facebook. Can we get Dean Cox to put the boots on again and re-register? Yes, please.
Jeez, we should have actually tried to pick him up at the mid-season draft. I don't know if we could have got him, though, but, geez, that'd be funny, though.
It would have been funny, wouldn't it?
Yeah, good old Shane Mumford treatment. He's only pudgy about 6 years out of the system and looks about 30 kilos overweight, but he could probably still do a better job than some of the other players.
That'd be like getting Stevie J and Dorr back from the Gold Coast. Play them all, mate.
Oh, Stewie Jew, man. It'd be like rolling Stewie Jew back out in the midfield.
That's right.
Just literally roll him around the ground. But
Doesn't he look like he's put on a bit of weight?
If there's one fit coach at the moment, it's got to be Nathan Buckley. He looks
ripped.
Yeah,
he is a gun.
He could probably still play. And I reckon he played at a pretty good level at VFL if he was playing today.
Yes, I agree with you.
Time for our matchups, key points, and predictions. So, matchup, Stephen, I'll kick things off. I have got Callum Mills against Orazio Fantasia. Obviously, Fantasia kicked the 4 goals last time. He looked a genuine game winner. He was breaking hearts and minds in that first half. If he can do it again, he stands a chance to win the game for him. There's also Tipping Woody, who is going to be picked up by God knows who, maybe Colin Reardon. But yeah, I think the big one in their forward line's got to be shutting down Fantasia, and Mills, I think, is the main man to do it.
I agree with you there, and I see Fantasia, as certain people like to call him.
Hamish McLaughlin.
Yes, they're right, is looking to actually go to South Australia. He wants out of Melbourne.
Well, that was the scuttlebutt, and it was pretty funny on Triple M today. He actually laughed at it and said him and his mates had a good laugh at it and said it's absolute BS, there's nothing to it. So, yeah, I was a bit surprised to read that, and I was a bit like, where did that come from? It came from left field, and I'm glad the players come out straight away, and he said, nah, it's BS, don't even bother with it.
That's right, but that was like he was the one who actually came out and said his name was Fantasia as well.
So his teammate trolled him, and then he trolled again, and then he came out and said, no, we've been giving you a bit of stick the whole time. It's actually Fantasia.
Fair enough.
I love it. Your matchup, please, Stephen.
Mine's a little bit out of the box, this one, and mine's actually the two coaches. Both are under pressure. Horse by the media about where he's going to be coaching next year, and Woosha by the media on whether he'll actually be the coach next year.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad. I like it. Do you want to give us a little bit more explanation as to why you see that? Because I can kind of see it from a different perspective.
Well, I actually see that. Well, Horse has been questioned a lot because of the AFL 360 interview that he did, and all the speculation about this $1.5 million a year for 5 years from North Melbourne. And then Woosha has basically been under the pump all year. And everyone in the media, particularly Matthew Lloyd, yeah, has been saying he's not the right coach for the job. So I think he deserves a go, but I think both coaches are under quite a lot of pressure to actually perform at the moment.
Yeah, they are. And Longmire's been, I guess he's had a bit of criticism with the start of the year that the Swans have had. Two from the last 3 years, they've gone 1-6 in the first 7 games. But more so this year that he's had the rumour of North Melbourne has actually been linked to him from even before round 8. So it's been, and remember, we played North Melbourne round 9. Scott was fired midweek between round 8 and 9. Longmire was instantly linked. But basically, there's rumours of him being linked to North Melbourne as far back as round 5-6. So he's been dealing with that a lot this year. So it's just interesting. And Woosha as well. I mean, Woosha's, I remember he famously said West Coast are never going to finish last. And like 2 months later, they were rock bottom and they won the Wooden Spoon. And then he got fired a couple of years later. And at the start of this year, you know, people are saying he was a mistake. So it's going to be interesting. I like it, actually. I like it.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually think both coaches need to actually be very careful. And I actually think Woosha deserves another go. I actually like Woosha as a coach. And I don't know why, but I've always liked him ever since the 2005-2006 days.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was a good coach then. You can't really say too much about the players he had. Some of them were very reckless. He's always been a good guy. He's one of the good guys of the AFL, I would say, even if sometimes his coaching does look a bit baffling. But key points now. So mine harks back to the last time we played him in round 8, but also a trend that we've been having over the last 2 months. And it's going to be even worse this week, Stephen. We have to stop the bleeding from clearances. You know, Zach Clark, he is going to dominate in the ruck. Doesn't matter who he's going to be up against. He's going to get the hit outs. He's going to get it by a fair margin. Fortunately, he's not a great ruckman, so he's not going to do too much damage. But when you're giving away that much to a guy who's pretty athletic, you know, you've got to be careful. So we just got to even up the center clearances and just try and get close to clearances in general, because we're still getting smashed in that number.
Yes, that's right, Justin. And I've just realized you've stitched me up a bit here with the next key point for me, and I'm not too happy about it, Justin. That's not actually the key point that I actually put down. This is what Justin's put down for my key point. Sydney Swanshirt Justin Mitchell used the ruckman Swans got in the mid-draft 2005 centimetre ruckman. Now, Justin, I know who Noel is. I know that they got him in the draft, and that is not my key point.
Oh, sorry. You said you didn't have a key point, so I put one in for you.
Yes, but then I gave you a really good one that you wouldn't allow me to use. So now I'm actually trying to find it currently.
I actually did. It was, if I recall, I thought I did put it in. It was when if Zach Jones gets 10 or more kicks, Swans will lose.
That's exactly right. That was my key point. But that was another joke one. So here's my actual key point, Justin, that I will actually give you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This is a shock for me too.
Right. Papley is actually ranked as the sixth best small forward in the AFL, kicking 25 goals so far this season. However, if he doesn't bring the defensive pressure this week, Saad will actually destroy us with his run-off half-back. How's that for a key point, Justin?
Oh, I love it. That is really, really good. Stephen is showing that not only does he watch football, he actually has a bit of insight. I love it. But it's going to be interesting because they're either going to play Ronk or Papley on him. So,
yes.
I mean, it's almost like one of those matchups like Papley on Saad or Ronk on Saad. I would say Papley for the tank, purely just for the tank, but they might rotate. And if they can lock him down, it's going to be a win for us.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But now I realise, Justin, we're actually going to start playing this game of trying to one-upmanship each other, so I actually think I'm going to have to start doing a bit of this myself.
Predictions. So we've got a prediction each. Mine is the Swans will record 48 or less inside 50s. I reckon that's one you could probably go to Sportsbet and put some money on. Podcast is not sponsored by Sportsbet. We're not affiliated, but they have all those sort of weird odds that you can get. So if there's a market, they probably have it. And I reckon, yeah, Swans will not get that many inside 50s, I'm afraid.
Sadly, I agree with you. And mine's very similar to yours. It's actually the Swans will get the lowest hit outs in recorded history, but will actually win the centre clearances.
Do you reckon Zach Clark could actually break the record for the most hit-outs in a game?
It's a possibility, isn't it? Seriously.
Yeah.
Because he's actually a good tap ruckman.
There's been about 5 or 6 ruckmen this year that have recorded almost 60 hit-outs against us. So,
yeah.
Witts had 56 or 58 hit-outs. Grundy and Gorm both had in the high 50s. Trying to remember, I think Bell Chambers had 35, 40 hitouts. Goldstein had upwards of 50 hitouts. I'm just trying to recall from recent games as well. We've been smashed.
Mumford had quite a few too, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. He had about 48, 45, 50 as well. We've been absolutely obliterated in the ruck this year. And our centre clearances, I think we've still got like one of the worst centre clearance or one of the worst clearance differentials in the league, full stop. So, and contested possessions continue to be an issue for us.
Yeah, that's right. And it's actually very strange. I don't know why we never ever went for Witts. Why didn't we try and pick him up from Gold Coast when he's actually a Sydney boy?
I don't know. They obviously had something that the Gold Coast wanted, and that was it. I'm not too sure when he was traded, so I can't really. This is a bit of a sort of on-the-spot question, so I can't really sort of comment on it, but I'm pretty sure he wanted to go to the Gold Coast, if I remember correctly at the time. So maybe he's getting paid.
He was drafted by the Gold Coast.
Yeah, he was at Collingwood.
Yeah.
And then he went to Gold Coast. But he is certainly on... I would imagine he's on a fair bit of money at Gold Coast, probably more than he would have got at Sydney. And at the time...
Yeah, that's right.
At the time, you're probably looking at, like... because he was at Collingwood, so maybe this is about 2 years ago, 2-3 years ago. We had Tippett, Naismith, Sinclair, Darcy Cameron, Toby Nankivis.
Yeah, we had quite a lot back then.
I would still put him in front of all of them.
Yeah, so would I.
Yeah. And this is at the time we were talking about Braden Pruce as well, who went to Melbourne. And him and Gawn, Taurus, and Ewan. So
yeah, that's right. And you just go, why didn't we actually chase Pruce? And what a silly mistake by Pruce to actually go to Melbourne thinking that he was actually going to get a chance to play with Gawn in the side.
The only way he was going to play was at full forward.
That's right. And he doesn't have the skills to play as a permanent full forward and backup ruckman.
No, no. So he's languishing at the moment and he might actually request to be traded, just like Gibbs. Gibbs is another one who might get traded in the next year or so.
Yeah, that's right. Well, did you hear that he was actually down in Geelong having a hamburger with some of the Geelong players today?
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Would not be surprised at all, to be honest. And if he was in the market, I'd hope the Swans would go for him because he's a good player.
Yeah, he is. And if that's being reported in the Geelong Advertiser tomorrow, there's a heads up for you, Justin.
There you go. There you go. So Gibbs having hamburgers. A man's got to eat and a man's got to eat.
That's right. But interesting that he's down there on a Wednesday.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. It's just that whole situation is weird. Thankfully, we've got enough weird as it is in Sydney at the moment. So, yeah, we'll move on to the weekend forecast where it all gets even more weird for us. But why don't you kick us off with your sure thing, please, Stephen?
Well, this is a definite sure thing. Alia and Reed will play sometime in the ruck this week.
Ah, it's Nostradamus at his best.
Totally. That one's very, very easy to guess.
Oh, if only we had Dean Towers still on the side.
He'd be our number one ruckman. Yeah, or maybe Robbie Fox.
Exactly. But we don't. So I think this is a given. Ali's going to start in a ruck, and he's probably going to play about 65% ruck. So that is as sure as it gets unless Reed somehow doesn't make the field.
Both of them get injured.
Yeah, oh, please don't say that, because you would say that so much about Callum Sinclair and... Oh, he's gone now. I'm not putting a hex on you, but no more injury talk. No more.
Okay, no more injury talk.
My sure thing, Fremantle will beat the Eagles in the Western Derby.
That will be a good one, and I hope they do after their loss to Carlton. Oh. I was devastated, actually, because I actually feel so sorry for Brendan Bolton.
Yeah, yeah. I recall on the podcast after he was fired and then they performed so well against Western Bulldogs. I was scathing in my villain file. I said it for Carlton. I said, you know, where was this performance when Brendan Bolton's, you know, job was on the line? How dare they play like this basically 2 days after he's been fired? It's a disgrace. You know, they need to be held accountable for the way that they act on and off the field. And, you know,
yep.
Good on Teague for telling him, you know, play with freedom, you know, take the shackles off. And, you know, Fremantle, I think they just rolled over. But, yeah, I think they're going to come out breathing fire this weekend. I don't think they're going to roll over as they usually do in the Derby.
Yeah, I hope so. And I hope Fremantle go. They're my choice for the premiership. I'd love to see Fremantle win it this year if the Swans can't.
Yeah, Fat Knife, I'd love to see up there. I know it's Nat Fife, but I love calling him Fat Knife. Most at stake, please, Stephen.
I actually say that Horse is got the most at stake this week. If the rucking situation backfires and actually costs us the game, questions will be asked of Horse and the coaching staff on why they did this, particularly in the media.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. I know that a lot of the blog followers did say on the social media responses that they did suggest that Michael Knoll wasn't quite fit enough to play AFL, that he was sort of struggling in the kneeful to play full games as the number one ruck. And he's been doing it pretty much since he came into the side. I know Darcy Cameron was playing in those first couple of games, but he was coming off a calf injury, so it's a good one.
I actually find funny, Justin, just before you go on around that, is around Knoll, is... he was actually playing in the VFL, oh, sorry, the SANFL, and was dominating. He's come into the NEAFL and really struggled. Is that because of the different game structure, do you reckon?
Well, there are some good ruckmen in the NEAFL. There are some genuinely good ruckmen in the NEAFL. So, honestly, I don't know. It might be the way that the Swans are playing. And their clearance numbers aren't good. He's basically playing with academy kids now.
Yeah, that's true. He is, isn't he?
Yeah. So if he was playing with the Swans NEAFL side 2 years ago, he'd be playing with AFL players, basically, who couldn't get inside.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, you're most at stake.
Look, it's not a Swans one. Alan Richardson won't see out the season if the Saints cop a belting. Now, I originally had this as the week. I reckon if they get beaten, they get beaten badly, there is a real risk that he's going to get fired. And soon. I know he's been getting the promises and the guarantees and that, but yeah, I mean, AFL's a cutthroat business. You can't be losing games badly. And I mean, he's pretty much up for the fight of his life at the moment.
Agreed. And you look at it, they guaranteed Bolton. Then he was gone the week later.
Yeah, exactly.
Could be the same for him.
Yeah, exactly. Your doomsday, please, Stephen.
All right, mine's a big one. 10 seconds to go in the game. The ball goes down into Essendon's forward line. 5 points down. Zach Clark takes a mark 10 metres out from goal, directly in front. Hasn't kicked a goal all game. Has only kicked one all year. He kicks a goal, wins the game for Essendon by a point. Horse, what are you doing?
No, see, if I was you and I was saying that, I would be Zach Clark takes a massive hanger in the last 10 seconds, lines up to kick a goal, and then plays on as the siren sounds. That would be, if you're an Essendon supporter.
Yes, that would be the doomsday if you're an Essendon supporter. It'll be us for easy, kicks the goal.
Yep, exactly. Mine is Zach Merritt and Dylan Shiel rack up 70 possessions between them without Ryan Clark. I don't know how much we can expect of good old Harry, but he is coming off a fairly lengthy injury stint, so he's been out of the side for, what, 6-7 matches, so yeah.
Seven matches.
So I don't know, fitness-wise, it's going to be interesting. I can't expect him playing 90 minutes or 90% of the game. Maybe 90 out of 120 minutes would be more reasonable, but we'll see. I just think they're going to have big
games. Do you reckon they'll play him on the back line?
No, straight in the midfield. They have to.
You reckon?
Yeah. He's a tagger. When he plays midfield, he plays mostly tag and shutdown roles.
Yeah, true. I just wonder, because of his fitness, I just wonder whether they'll play him off a halfback flank and allow someone else to come in and play. Well,
they might put Florin in that way. They might put him on the flank and put Florin in the midfield to play mostly as a defensive midfielder. Mm. But the question is, neither of them really have the tank at the moment to do it for the full match.
Or you put Florent in the forward line, Papley in as a tagger, and Cunningham on the back line.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they do it. I reckon it's going to be a combination of all three throughout the match. They're just going to rotate as much as they can.
Yeah. But you're right. I think his fitness could be a big issue.
Yeah, so it's just going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But look, Stephen, thank you so much for coming on. It has been a long time. You sound brilliant tonight. So thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure again.
Not a problem at all, Justin. Thank you very much. And thank you, Josh, for organising my mic. I finally received it in the mail, so I'm back on and I'm back at it.
You are brilliant at this. Now, guys, as always, you can find us on social media. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with the tag The Swans Blog. We also have our second Facebook page, Swanscast Podcast. So get in touch with us. Leave us a review. We love it. Keep it coming. Until next time, go Swans.
Go the Swannies.